At first light, Coke stood up, holstered his rifle, which he kept against his chest, shook out his blanket, and rolled it up. A small fire stood slanted in the morning wind beneath the blackened coffee pot.
Well, you're not one of them late sleepers, are you, Coke?
Picking up his tin coffee cup from where he'd left it turned down on a rock, Coke rounded a finger in its handle and squatted down near the flames.
Me and the boys were just talking, wondering if you might be interested in making some money. Because if you are, well, it might be a lucky thing us running into one another out here.
I'm listening.
We got some things in the works, Coke. If you don't mind using that rifle of yours, maybe having to pull a mask over your nose.
Outlawry.
Well, that's one word for it. I prefer to call myself a long rider. Think you could stand the pace?
I can stand whatever pace I'm put to. How much money we talking about? Who do I have to answer to?
Oh, money-wise, I'd have to say the sky's the limit. Now, as far as who you'd answer to, well, that would be me for the time being.
For the time being? You mean you're in charge now, but might get shot any day?
No, I mean I'm in charge of this here bunch. But once we get to where we're headed, we'll be hooked up with a bigger bunch. We'll make our moves, then we'll all break up, go our own way until we get together again. It's the only way to go these days.
I can't argue that. It's the way the James Youngers have been doing it for years.
The James Youngers are small potatoes to what we're talking about. The bunch I'm talking about is bigger than some armies.
Oh, yeah? Who are they?
Not so fast, one step at a time. You want to ride with us, check things out, you'll see what I mean. Fair enough?
Fair enough. I don't want to jump into something I can't jump out of.
Coke jerked his head toward Bob Hearns, who sat a few yards away sipping coffee with a sullen look on his face.
What about him? Am I going to have to kill that bell-stealing peckerwood if I ride with you?
No, that's hard to say. Is it something you'd have qualms doing?
Not at all. I'll hammer him right now.
Coke drew his rifle and swung it toward Bob Hearns.
Easy, Coke!
Bob Hearns' face turned stark white as he took a dive across the ground and rolled into cover behind a rock. Pryor saw Hearns' pistol come above the edge of the rock.
Don't shoot, Bob! It was all a misunderstanding! Coke didn't mean nothing by it!
Like hell he didn't! Step out of the way, Pryor! I'll kill that sumbitch!
Now look what you've done, Coke! He's so fired up now, it's likely you will have to kill him!
Then let me get it done!
No! Not now! We don't want no gunshots going off right now! Settle down! Bob! Holster that pistol, act like you got some goddamn sense! There ain't gonna be no shooting this morning! Do you understand me?
I'll hold off for now if he will. I ain't gonna be thrown down on without defending myself.
All right. Now, let's all simmer down here. Coke is gonna be riding with us. Now, I can't keep getting between the two of you.
Who says this man is gonna be riding with us?
The men all turned at the same time and looked up at the face of Roundhouse Eddie Jenkins, who sat atop his horse with his rifle cradled toward him. Coke looked past Roundhouse at Pete Lambertus, then past Lambertus at Big Joe Macon. Behind Big Joe, Coke caught sight of a woman, her head bowed, her arms drawn behind her back.
Jesus God, Roundhouse, let a body know when you come riding in like that. We might have shot before we saw who it was.
Yeah, so might have we. I just saw this man back at Fort Smith 3 days ago, wearing a badge. Now he's riding with us? I don't think so.
Who's in charge, Pryor, you or him?
Draw your rifle back, Jenkins. Coke rides with us if I say he does. Yeah, I expect you did see him in Fort Smith. He was wearing a badge. But he told me last night that he dropped it on Parker's desk. The judge fired him. Don't you come in here telling me what to do. This here's my gang.
Pete, did you hear anything about a deputy getting fired?
Yeah, I did. But I didn't hear who it was. That deputy was talking about it at the bar the night we left.
It was me. I wouldn't bow and curtsy for the judge, so he yanked my badge. That's all I've got to say to you about it.
He was in the saloon the other morning when Sims and us were playing poker.
Yeah, I saw him. Who do you suppose he would have backed if the lead started flying?
If I backed anybody, it would have been Quick Charlie Sims. Let's face it, you were in the wrong. Sims cleaned your clocks at poker, and you couldn't stand it. Any other questions?
1,000. 2,000.
You hear that, Pete? He thinks Sims skinned us.
Yeah, I heard. Bring her up here, Joe. Show this man who got skinned in the long run.
Coke was stunned for a second at the sight of Kate McCorkle as Big Joe Macon led her horse forward and swung it to a halt in front of Coke and Lewis Pryor. Kate sat slumped in her saddle, half conscious.
Miss McCorkle?
Coke reached up and pulled her down into his arms. He wiped a strand of damp hair back from Kate's forehead and saw the cut above her swollen left eye.
What kind of low, cowardly snake would treat a woman this way?
She's got worse treatment than that coming to her when J.T. Priest gets a hold of her. But if you're no longer a part of Judge Parker and his bunch, what's it to you?
What's it to me? I wouldn't see a dog treated this way, let alone a woman.
She's not a woman, Coke. She's Quick Charlie Sims' woman. J.T. Priest is going to hold on to her to get Sims to come to him.
Of course, that doesn't mean we can't all get to be real good friends between here and where we're going. You'd like to know where that is, I reckon.
I don't give a damn where we're headed or how long it takes to get there. But if anybody touches this woman, I'll kill them where they stand.
Well, now don't worry, Coke. I hadn't planned on her arriving in this kind of shape, and I won't stand for any more harm coming to her. Give her some water. Clean her up.
Pryor looked up at Roundhouse Eddie as Coke carried Kate McCorkle away.
You had no cause to rough her up.
You should have seen what she did to Big Joe. She nearly kicked his balls up into his belly. She acted all right until we got out of Fort Smith. Then every time we'd stop to give her water and let her tend to herself, she'd go wilder than a mountain cat.
Still, I don't like this kind of business. I ride the long trail for money, not for beating up women. Oh, and another thing. I don't like being called upon to act out of revenge for J.T. Priest or anybody else.
Then you better turn your boys around and head a different direction, Pryor. Priest is going to kill Quick Charlie Sims if it's the last thing he does. He'll use that woman or anybody else he has to. That's just where things stand with him. But let's be honest about it. Riding with Los Pistoleros, you'll make 10 times what you're used to making, robbing them little hole-in-the-wall banks like you've been doing.
Well, maybe things will go a little better once Priest gets his killing done.
Yeah, I expect they will.
Big Joe Macon jerked his head toward Coke and Kate McCorkle.
What's the story on you bringing that bounty hunter in? You really think you can trust him? Wasn't a week ago he was riding for the hanging judge.
Trust ain't got nothing to do with it. I never even trusted my own mama. As far as riding for the judge, half the outlaws I know were lawmen at one time or another. Priest put the word out, said gather all the men you could find. That man right over there is one shooting son of a bitch. And if you don't think so, you just walk right over there and take his rifle and chase him out of here.
Don't tell me that. I might just do it.
Yeah? You might, but I ain't counting on it.
Near the low fire, Jake Coke wet his bandana with water from his canteen. Carefully, he touched the tip of it to the swollen cut on Kate McCorkle's head.
Oh, I fought them off.
I expect you did, Miss McCorkle. Now, you just lie still.
They didn't. I didn't let them.
Shh, you take it easy.
Where are we?
We're headed for the Red. From there, we'll cross Texas to the border. Sounds like we'll be meeting up with J.T. Priest and the rest of his gang.
Didn't waste much time, did you?
I got lucky.
Where's your dog?
He's around. He won't come out unless he has to. Buster don't like people, but he'll come if I get in trouble.
How do you know he will?
Because I carried him home in my coat pocket 9 miles through the snow the day his mama shunned him out of the litter. Don't worry about Buster. He was the runt, but he's made up for it.
Then, what's our plan? We gonna make a run for it?
No, not now, Miss McCorkle. We'd likely catch a bullet in the back. Besides, this is where Sims wanted me, wasn't it? In the midst of Priest's gang.
Kate laid a hand on Coke's forearm, stopping him from wiping the bandana across her forehead.
Listen to me. Charlie and the other two deputies aren't behind us. They took the coach trail.
Oh. I suppose Sims figured it would give me more time to get inside Los Pistoleros that way.
Do yourself a favor. Don't try to figure out what Charlie has in mind. Until we see otherwise, don't count on anybody but yourself. Nobody else is on our side.
I always count it that way, Miss McCorkle. But we've got an ally here if things get out of hand. So don't worry, we'll be all right.
Kate glanced around at the men standing a few yards away.
An ally? Who?
See that man over there?
Coke made a glancing gesture toward Henry Hearns.
He used to be a student of mine when I taught school.
Jesus.
Kate saw the angry look on Henry Hearns' face as Hearns stared coldly at Coke from 20 yards away.
He looks like he wants to kill you.
Well, that's what he told me, but he didn't mean it. He's working undercover for somebody. Pinkertons, probably.
How do you know that?
A couple of things he said when I first got here last night. He figured he'd better feel me out, see if I'm still working for the law, or really throwing it in with his bunch. He ain't sure yet, but he's waiting to hear back from me.
Well, what did he say that led you to think this?
Said he wants to kill me because I once blamed him for stealing the schoolhouse bell. He knows that school was too poor to ever afford a bill.
Kate shot a glance over at Hearns, then looked back into Coke's eyes.
Oh, that's pretty thin ice, Coke. I wouldn't step out on it.
I will, though. I've got faith in him. You see, Miss McCorkle, not meaning to brag, but I was a good school teacher. I didn't teach school very long, but I can promise you this. No student of mine ever turned out to be an outlaw.
Kate McCorkle only stared at him for a second, trying to understand this man with his strange eyes and his odd way of looking at things. Other than what she'd heard of him and his sawed-off rifle, there was little about him to instill confidence. Yet now she'd seen something, perhaps the very thing that Quick Charlie had told her about. This was the kind of man you wanted on your side in a tight spot. She looked around again at the camp, the hardened faces, the holstered gun surrounding her. Then she looked back at Jake Coke, and she saw by the look on his face that he was waiting, needing to hear something from her, something to let him know where they stood with one another.
Well, Miss McCorkle, what do you think?
Coke stood up and reached his hand down to her, helping her to her feet.
I think from now on, you should call me Kate.
Well, thank you, Kate. First thing we've got to do is let this man know we're on the same side. I can't get close enough to talk to him without it looking suspicious. Think you can do that for us?
You got it, Jake. If he's with us, I'll find out.
Oh, he's with us, I'm sure of it.
I hope you're right. If you're wrong, I'll have to kill him.
Kill him? How?
But Kate offered no reply. The straight razor up under her arm was gonna be her own little secret. They pushed hard toward the banks of the Red, stopping at noon only long enough to water the horses. Roundhouse Eddie and Pete Lambertus had insisted that Kate McCorkle ride double with Jake Coke on his big dapple gray. Coke saw their logic. If he and Kate decided to make a run for it, they wouldn't get far with two of them on the same horse. When Kate McCorkle started to walk off among a stretch of brush to relieve herself, Pete Lambertus stepped in front of her, blocking her path.
Where do you think you're going?
Where do you think I think I'm going?
Kate sidestepped him. He caught her by her forearm.
You turn her loose, Lambertus! She's been in the saddle all day!
Lambertus let go of Kate's arm, but he did so slowly, not wanting to appear rattled by the rifle in Coke's hand.
She goes anywhere, I go with her.
You ain't going nowhere with her alone, Lambertus. Not without going through me.
Is that a fact?
Hold it. I'll go bat watching her.
Henry Hearns looked at Pete Lambertus.
If it's all right with you, I don't want nobody shooting Jake Coke before I get a crack at him.
Pete Lambertus gave Hearns a puzzled look. He stood watching him as Hearns reached out and shoved Kate McCorkle forward.
Go on, lady. Don't take all day.
Lambertus looked back at Coke, then at Lewis Pryor as Coke holstered his rifle.
What's that all about?
It's the damnedest thing ever, Pete. Hearns here has a grudge against Coke that goes all the way back to his school days. Coke was a school teacher. Seems he got Hearns into some trouble over stealing a bell.
Pete Lambertus stood looking back and forth between Pryor and Coke with a curious smile. Then he looked at Roundhouse Eddie.
Damn! What kind of gang have we got here?
Jake Coke stepped back to his dappled gray and checked its hooves, glancing around into the distance for Buster, but not seeing him. He'd caught sight of the dog's tail above a sandy rise earlier in the day, but hadn't seen him since. But he wasn't concerned. Buster knew how to take care of himself. The dog was close by. Coke knew it. When Kate McCorkle stepped out from the brush, smoothing down the front of her riding skirt, she kept her head lowered.
Coke tells me you were one of his best students. Says there's no way you'd be thrown in with the likes of these bunch.
Really? I don't know what else he's told you, but I spent the last 3 months getting close to Lewis Pryor, hoping it would take me where I want to go.
To Los Pistoleros?
Maybe. Let's go. They're looking this way. I've heard of you. You used to be J.T. Priest's woman. He got you out of jail in Colorado.
Kate stared straight ahead, slipping the razor down into her skirt pocket, not offering anything about Priest or the time she'd spent with him.
I'm gonna tell Coke you're not nearly as hot on killing him as you appear to be.
Thanks, ma'am. You do that. We've all got a lot at stake. Let's try to sit tight until we reach Sonora.
When they had returned to the spot where the others readied their horses, Hearns gave Kate a shove as the rest of the men looked on. He gave Jake Coke a cold stare, then walked away, seeing Lambertus and Roundhouse Eddie swing up into their saddles. Kate stepped over to Jake Coke's dapple gray. Coke mounted and pulled her up behind him.
What do you have to say?
Well, he played it close. Didn't say anything that would get him in a spot, but I think you're right. He's a lawman. He said we all need to sit tight until we get to Sonora.
That says it all.
They rode forward, past Roundhouse Eddie, Pete Lambertus, and Big Joe Macon, the three men lagging back to guard him from the rear.
Can you picture what J.T. Priest is going to do with Pryor if he's wrong about Jake Coke?
Roundhouse Eddie Jenkins ran a hand across his parched lips.
But imagine how pleased Priest is going to be if Coke is on the up and up. He's a hell of a gunman. There's no denying that.
I know. That's why he ain't laying dead back there.
J.T. Priest led the horsemen through the rail fence surrounding the long front yard of the Burdeen spread and stopped his horse for a moment to raise his hat and wipe sweat from his brow. Beside him, R. Martin Swan sat nervously atop a sorrel mule they'd taken from a small goat herder the day before.
Boys, this is Vincent and Sergio spread. Let's make ourselves at home, but be sure we leave this place the way we found it. No burning, no pillaging. In other words, Everybody tidy up after themselves, the way your ma raised you to do.
They sidled their horses loosely abreast and rode the last 100 yards toward a large house constructed of adobe and sun-bleached frame.
Well, Vince and Sergio have done well for themselves.
Yep, makes you proud for them, don't it, Rance? I always get a warm feeling knowing a couple of former pistoleros have made good. You can rest easy now, Swan. You're about to get your fees paid.
10 yards from the house, Swan saw 4 men step out onto the front porch and spread out, each carrying a rifle, each taking positions behind the thick posting timbers. Swan looked at J.T. Priest's face, but he saw no sign of alarm or even surprise as they moved slowly forward. 2 more men stepped out of the house. One, tall, slender Mexican. The other, a barrel-chested man with a long red beard. Swan watched them step forward, side by side, their right hands hooked in their pistol belts.
Sergio! Vincent! My goodness, boys! Looks like you're expecting rustlers. It's only me!
See, we recognized it was you, Tuck. What are you doing out of jail? We heard you're going to hang.
I know, Sergio. Wasn't that a terrible thing? But thanks to R. Martin Swan here, I'm back in the saddle, prime as ever. If you saw it was me, what's these boys doing all cocked and ready? Ain't I welcome here?
We are ranchers now. We have nothing more to do with...
You'll have to excuse Sergio. He don't get off the place enough. Makes him testy as hell.
Vincent Burdine took a step forward, wanting to keep things in check.
The fact is, we have had trouble with rustlers of late. You'd be surprised how many of them are old boys we knew back when we rode the Long Rider Trail. Reckon they figure we owe them something. Of course, we always knew you didn't feel that way. Step down, Tuck. You and your men water your horses. While you do, I'll have the cook prepare something and bag it for you. Something for the road?
Vincent, you're all hot.
Vincent and Sergio noted that the rest of the men stayed atop their horses, some of them stepping into their horses in a loose half circle as if looking the place over, then coming to a stop in a wider, closer position to the men behind the posts. Swan sat still, looking around nervously.
The fact is, we can't stay that long. And you know me, I never was much of a greasy bagger. No. I just hadn't heard anything from you. No letter or nothing while I sat there in that jail. I said to myself, you know, as soon as I get out of here, I better go check on the Burdine spread. Make sure everybody's all right. So here I am.
We sent no money because we thought you had plenty. You and Mobley had everything. A private Pullman car, stocks, and investments.
That was true at first. But after old Mobley disappeared, and I started running from the law, you just can't imagine how quick the wealth went dry on me. Why, this poor brilliant lad hasn't even been paid for getting me off Parker's hanging scaffold.
That's too bad, Tuck. We'd be glad to help you out for old time's sake. How much do you need? 1,000? 2,000?
Your generosity overwhelms me. I bet you still got that big steel railroad safe in there, don't you? The one the newspapers in New York said could never be broken into?
So what if we do?
Seeing there was no one stopping it, Vincent Burdine's hand slid from his belt to his pistol butt.
Hell, Vince. You already know the answer to that.
Wait! We are the only ones who know the combination! No!
Vincent Burdine was the first to fall, shot by Rance Mecklenburg. J.T. Priest turned his pistols to Sergio. The first shot shattered the slender Mexican's kneecap. The next one sliced through his thigh. Sergio managed a shot as Priest sprang forward, but the bullet went wild, clipping the tip of the sorrel mule's ear. J.T. Priest kicked Sergio's pistol across the dirt and clamped a boot down on his neck.
There now. That didn't take much. You boys got rusty, I expect, living a good life.
You better come and talk, or by all the saints, I swear.
Don't start babbling on me, Sergio.
Priest pointed his pistol at Sergio's left calf.
I can't kill you yet. You just said you and Vincent are the only ones knows the safe combination.
I will never tell you the combination.
Sure you will, Sergio. You never was that tough. Mac, come get this fool. Stop the bleeding. Sounds like he's got a long day ahead of him.
The fall from the mule had knocked the breath out of R. Martin Swan.
Come on, Swanny boy, pull yourself together. Let's go inside, have some hot beef and biscuits. Soon as Matt gets Sergio settled down, we'll see how hard it's gonna be to collect what I owe you.
My law partners and I, don't want the fee. Forget the money.
Nonsense, lad. Come on, you'll like this. It'll make you appreciate a hard-earned dollar.
Priest pulled Swan along behind him.
Get this mess cleaned up out here before we leave, boys. Remember what I told you. Leave this place looking like we found it.
Inside the large house, J.T. Priest pulled a cringing Mexican woman from beneath a covered table and shoved her through the house toward the kitchen.
You better get some food whipped up here. Just consider us house guests for the time being. I know old Burdeen would have wanted it this way.
R. Martin Swan stood back, shaken, as Macklenburg and two of the men, Spence and Ames, dragged Sergio across the stone floor and into the long kitchen. The Mexican woman set about her task, taking food from the pantry with trembling hands. J.T. Priest stepped over to the kitchen wall and slung open a wide door to reveal the tall steel railroad safe.
I knew that baby was still here. Well, let's get to work, Mac. Swanny boy here needs his fees paid.
R. Martin Swan stood in silent awe looking at that huge and penetrable safe.
Is that the one I read about years ago? The one that was made special for...
Yep, that's it. Everybody wondered where it disappeared to. It took 6 mules just to haul it here on a construction wagon. Vincent Burdeen found the man who designed it living in Bath, England. You don't want to know how old Vincent got the combination from him.
Macklenburg slid a heavy, high-back Spanish chair to the center of the room. Then he jerked Sergio up by his shoulders and slung him into it.
It does not matter what you do to me. I will never tell you the combination.
I almost hope that's true, Sergio.
Hey, you hit and I'll talk, Mac.
Sounds good to me, Spence.
Rance Macklenburg crouched down in front of Sergio, while the two men stood behind the chair, bracing it.
Ouch! Now I even felt that myself. You sure you don't want to give Mac here the combination? I sure would if I were you.
Spence grabbed Sergio's hair and jerked his face up.
Now listen to me, you little...
Sergio spit in his face.
Are you... dirty.
J.T. Priest stepped away from the safe and in between Spence and Sergio.
Hold it, damn it! Spence, you can't talk with his ribs caved in, you idiot! Mac, you handle the persuasion part personally. Keep him alive until he tells us something.
Sure thing, J.T.
Priest darted a glance at the Mexican cook who stood cringing, frozen in place.
How's that grub coming along?
Dios mío.
She seemed to snap out of a trance and busied herself with biscuit flour, spilling a long stream of it on the blood-splattered floor.
I just want you to know, Serge, old buddy, this is gonna hurt you a lot worse than it does me.
The priest walked about the kitchen, looking things over as R. Martin Swan hit his face and tried to shut out the sound. Priest fingered through the drawer of a small table and took out a black cigar from a wooden box.
Maybe this'll help.
I will die before I tell you anything.
Oh? I just find it hard to believe that.
As Priest stepped closer, Clayton and Earl Hubbs came hurrying through the house, carrying a dusty wooden crate between them.
Boss, take a look at this. It's A-grade dynamite. The big stuff. The kind they use to move mountains.
Jesus, be careful.
The Hubbs brothers laid the crate down on the big wooden table.
Where'd you find this?
In little shed beside the barn. We figured you'd want to see it right away.
Right you were. Well, Sergio, looks like you and old Vince Burdine weren't nearly as out of the robbing business as you let on. What's this for?
We kept it just in case.
Just in case what? In case you wanted to blow yourselves a dam from here to El Paso?
In case the cattle business did not work out.
See? Nobody ever really quits the outlaw trail once they've been on it. Tell the truth. This is part of that big government shipment that got stolen last fall, isn't it?
Sergio only nodded and dropped his head.
I thought so. It's been showing up everywhere. I even heard about it in jail. There was also over $500,000 taken in that robbery. You and Burdine were in on that, weren't you?
Sergio stiffened, looking down and shaking his head.
Mac, punch him.
No, wait. It's true. We did it. It was the last time, though, I swear it. We only needed the money to hold us over till spring.
Hell, Sergio, I don't care why you did it. All I care about now is where's the damn money? Is it in the safe?
No, it is not here. He's with my brother in Mexico.
Now, bullshit. I know where your brother lives down there. There ain't a way in the world you and Burdine would have left that kind of cash with him. Paco's a bigger thief than any of us.
Then think what you will, Tuck. I will not tell you the combination. So you might as well kill me.
Well, whatever you think's best. I don't want to argue about it.
Damn, JT, why? Now we'll never know the combination.
Pay attention, Mac.
Priest wagged the stick of dynamite.
We don't need to fool with him all day. I'll blow the door off that sucker. I'm betting that government robbery money is right inside there.
But I always heard this safe can't be blown, JT.
They only said that to keep people from trying, Mac. I've never seen a safe that I can't crack like a duck egg.
I don't know, JT. You've been out of circulation for a while. This stuff is more powerful than it used to be.
Give me some room, boys. Let me show you how it's done.
JT Priest rose up from his huddled position, dusting his shoulders.
Lord God!
Rance Macklenburg looked at the spot where the kitchen had once stood, and he flinched as a table leg fell to the ground in front of him.
JT, it's gone!
Yeah, I see it, damn it.
JT stepped forward, seeing the hull of the front part of the house still standing, dust and smoke billowing from the doorway and blown out windows.
They don't build nothing like they used to.
No, JT, I mean the safe. It's gone!
Well, I'll be damned. Where is it?
You don't suppose,
Macklenburg shot a glance upward and ducked back a step.
No, hell no. It was too heavy to be lifted that far. Everybody spread out. Look around for it. Damn it, do I have to do everything myself?
Harry Turpin and Dean Spence hurried off to the left, looking all around the flat, sandy soil, now strewn with debris. Dean Spence looked around and saw Dick Witt, Huey Moss, and Clarence Ames scurrying in the other direction. He turned to Turpin.
This is crazy. JT better show me more than this, or I'm putting my knees in the wind. He damn near blew us all to hell.
I know it. I barely made it behind the water trough before that blast went off. Now he's yelling like we all caused this? I wasn't raised to be talked down to.
I wish you'd look back there.
Spencer nodded toward Leonard Hergo, who hadn't gone off in search of the safe, but rather had sat down on a chunk of broken kitchen table and crossed a boot over his knee.
Old Leonard ain't exactly giving it his all, is he?
I don't blame him. Leonard said he didn't lose the safe. He wasn't gonna look for it. And if I was JT, I wouldn't get too bossy with him. Leonard's not been what you'd call an outlaw till now. But he will shoot a man for very little reason if he's crowded. And that's a stone-cold fact.
Reckon Leonard is as put out by all this as we are?
I don't know. Go ask him if you want to. But Leonard doesn't like things getting on his nerves, if you know what I mean. He won't tolerate a whole lot of foolery.
Here it is, boss! We found it!
Clayton and his brother Earl were waving their arms. At their feet, the big safe lay upside down. One corner of its top jammed 3 feet into the ground.
Look at those two. Hadn't been for their dumbasses taking that dynamite to them, this wouldn't have happened. They've been all over Priest like he's their long-lost daddy. Makes me sick.
You ever rode with any of these men before?
Nah, just Macklenburg. Him and me robbed our share of trains back in Kansas.
Did he use dynamite that way?
Ain't nobody but a damn fool ever used dynamite that way. Macklenburg's all right. I ran into him a few weeks back. He said Los Pistoleros was taking in men. I jumped at it. Now that I've seen this JT Priest up close, I ain't all impressed. But neither is Hergo.
Neither am I.
The men gathered around the upturned safe and stared, seeing the door was still soundly intact.
Damn it to hell! Somebody get me a rope!
A rope?
Leonard Hergo had moved in with the others and stood with his arms crossed, a cigarette between his gloved fingers.
There ain't a big enough rope in the state of Kansas to half that big son of a bitch.
All right, then 3 ropes, 12 ropes, damn it! Can somebody do what the hell I tell them?
Leonard Hergo had led his horse behind him. He turned, stepped over to the saddle horn, took down his coiled rope, walked back over and pitched it on the ground at JT's feet.
There you are. Now pluck her out of there.
What's your name? Hergo, right?
Yep.
What's stuck in your craw, Hergo?
Nothing. I just don't like being damn near lifted out of my boots because somebody doesn't know what the hell they're doing.
Whoa now. We're all a little shook loose right now, so let's get back together. Clayton, Earl, come on. Let's get some ropes around this sucker and get it up from there.
Everybody stand tight. You're saying I don't know how to blow a safe?
Do I need to?
JT Priest's jaw tightened, and so did his hand around his pistol butt. But he saw no fear in Hergo's dark eyes, only confidence and determination. A tense second passed. Then JT's firm lips curled slightly in a faint smile. His hand loosened on the pistol butt.
By God, that is one contrary safe, I have to admit. I never seen one like it before. Any of you boys?
See what I meant a while ago? Leonard will speak his mind every time.
All right, boys. That's enough kidding around for one day. Let's get some ropes around this sucker and drag it up. We got more dynamite.
Leonard Hergo turned and led his horse back toward the hull of the house. As the men walked to their horses to get their ropes, J.T. Priest turned to Rance Macklenburg and nodded at Hergo.
Where'd you find that smart-mouthed bastard?
El Paso. Why? You want to get rid of him?
Let it go. I got something for him to do. Something that'll suit him just fine. I figured on leaving a couple of men here to bushwhack the marshals. Hergo will be one of them.
Macklenburg looked around at the blown-out house.
But the element of surprise is gone now, JT. The marshals will see something's wrong here from a mile away. They'll be ready for an ambush.
Then Hergo and the others will just have to make out the best they can, won't they? Now let's blow that safe and get going. We're wasting time here.
Sullivan Hart, 2 Jack Roth, and Quick Charlie Sims had picked up the tracks of J.T. Priest and his men's horses at the burnt stagecoach. From there, they had pushed almost non-stop through the night, only getting down from their horses long enough to swap saddles to the spare mounts they'd brought along from the relay station. By dawn, they'd reached the outskirts of Mobita, Texas.
I know where they'll stop first. Vincent Burdine and Sergio J. Joles have a spread 4 miles out along the old Comanche Trail. Burdine and Joles are supposed to have gone straight a few years back, but I never believed it.
Burdine? That's the name Raymond Doyle gave me.
Said that's where he got the box full of government dynamite.
Roth gazed out along the hoof print.
Then we better scout it out good before we go in.
Let's go.
They rode hard until they topped a low rise and spotted the front gates of the Burdine spread and the shell of the house 200 yards beyond.
Looks like a war was fought in there. If there's anybody around, they're well hidden. Big crater holes in the ground everywhere.
Sims took up a telescope, eagerly looking through it. Then he passed it to Sullivan Hart.
Have they been practicing with the dynamite?
Why would they be?
Keeping a few yards between them as they neared the house, they saw the Mexican woman step out from behind the small shed with a rifle pointed at them.
Do not come any closer or I will shoot!
Ma'am, we're federal marshals in pursuit of the man who burned a stage and killed the driver over in Indian territory! Lower the rifle! We mean you no harm!
As Sullivan Hart spoke to the woman, Sims edged his horse away, giving his full attention to the large craters in the ground, drifting from one to another, examining closely the deep hoof prints and drag marks from one hole to the next. At the fourth hole in the ground, he stopped and pushed up his hat brim. When Hart and Roth finally convinced the Mexican woman to lower her rifle, they walked with her through the downed roof timbers and broken furniture as she babbled in mixed English and Spanish about what had happened the day before. At the spot where the kitchen had stood, they looked down at a blanket on the ground and saw the half-naked body of Clarence Ames lying flat on his back with the handle of a butcher knife standing from his chest as if it had grown there. Ames's dead eyes stared blankly at the sky. Hart and Roth looked at the woman, getting the picture.
He was going to make me lie down with him.
You needn't explain, ma'am. The others left him here to ambush us. See?
See. There are three of them, but the other two left. I think they will be waiting for you along the trail. I hear Senor Priest tell them he will pay them much money if they kill you.
Gracias, ma'am. Priest left them here to ambush us, but the other two saw it was a losing situation. They'll be waiting somewhere ahead.
Where is Sims?
I don't know. Out back somewhere. Last I saw, he was following the holes in the ground.
They went around back. Sims waved to him from 60 yards back along a stretch of scrub brush and cottonwood trees.
There he is. What's he standing on?
I don't know, but he looks excited.
Sims had kicked away the remaining brush and tree limbs from the safe and stood atop it with his hands on his hips.
I don't believe it. They've done all this trying to blow up a safe?
That's all I can make of it. Evidently, they didn't do much good. Looks like they bounced it all over the place and still haven't put a dent in it.
So they gave up and just hid it back there, hoping to come back to it, I guess.
Oh, yeah, J.T. Priest will come back for it. He must think there's something pretty important in it, as much trouble as they went to trying to get it open.
Sims nodded at the ground where the broken handles of two picks and a sledgehammer lay in the dirt.
Priest never could handle a safe. But you can bet it's got his interest. Must be driving him crazy leaving it here.
Hart moved his horse in close and ran a hand down the front of the safe.
Is this the one I think it is? The one that's been missing since the big train robbery in Kansas?
Well, that's the one, all right. It's this baby's gonna turn the tables on J.T. Priest and set Kate free.
Hart and Roth just looked at one another.
Leave it to J.T. Priest to get everything going his way, then let his greed get the better of him.
What are you thinking, Sims? The priest is gonna come back here for that safe and we'll just stick around here waiting for him? We're not gonna do that. We're on his trail, and I'm not stopping. It could be months before he comes back here.
Oh, don't worry, Hart. We're not getting off his trail. But it's not gonna be months before he comes back for whatever's inside here. I'll see to that, I promise. Priest said for me to come to him alone if I want to see Kate alive. Good enough. That's exactly what I'm gonna do.
Don't be a fool, Sims. Priest will kill you the minute he lays eyes on you.
Have you got any better idea? Yeah, I didn't think so.
But still, Sims, you can't play this thing Priest's way. He won't even listen to what you got to say. You said so yourself back in Fort Smith. He'll kill you before you even get a chance to make him listen.
I know what I said back in Fort Smith, but things have changed since then. All I'm concerned with now is getting Kate back in one piece. I'll make him listen. He won't kill me now, not if he wants to get this safe open. He'll go out of his way to keep me alive. Me and Kate both. By now, he's figured out that there's no way he's ever gonna blow this safe or bust it open. Now he's gotta have somebody who knows how to spin it. Listen to the tumblers. Pick it open.
Are you saying you can open this safe? Don't you think you better try it first just to make sure?
No, we'd have to turn it over to get to the dial. That'd take us all day. I don't have time. What I need to do is ride back to Mobita and see if the bank there has what I need.
What do you need?
I need a couple of empty bank bags. One that's plain, one that's marked U.S. government. I need some paper money bands, too, and a stack of new dollar bills. About $1,000 worth.
I don't like this, Sims. You're not gonna convince Priest you can open this safe with a few dollars and some empty bags.
I've got to. Not only do I have to convince him I can open this safe, I've got to make him believe I'm the only person in the world who can.
I don't like nobody telling me what I can or can't do with a woman.
Big Joe Macon turned to Roundhouse Eddie and Pete Lambertus, who sat atop their horses beside him. The three of them watching Jake Coke and Kate McCorkle from across the camp along the west bank of the Rio Grande.
Besides, now that we're in Mexico, I don't think it's even against the law.
Joe, what you're wanting to do to that woman is not only against the law of Mexico, it's probably against the law of nature.
Come to think of it, you might be right. But there ain't a man here not wanting to do the same thing. They already would have if it weren't for that cockeyed Peckerwood keeping so close to her. You'd think they were betrothed to look at him.
Cockeyed, huh? Is that what's wrong with his eyes? I was just feared his one eye was blind.
No, he's cockeyed as a goose. Look at him. He's cockeyed, stoop-shouldered, damn near bald. Don't look like he'd have sense enough to hammer a cork in a bunghole. And here we sit. Ain't a one of us mean a move on him.
You're right, we haven't. The way I figure, he's just making our job easier on us. As long as she ain't trying to get away, I don't care if he pours her coffee or even powders her nose for her. We told Priest we'd bring her to him. That's what we're doing. If Coke wants to wet nurse her all the way to Sonora, we'll let him have at it.
But it don't feel right, us not keeping her tied up and on the end of a rope. Then hop right on down, go over and tell him, Joe. Then after you and him beat the living hell out of one another, you can sit up all night watching her. He ain't seen the day he could beat the living hell out of me, Roundhouse. It's that rifle that keeps me in my saddle. Now, I ain't ashamed to admit I'm no fancy gunman, but bare fist, toe to toe, I'd stand on his boots and bat his head back and forth like it was on a spring.
Is that a fact? And why didn't you do that the other night when he gave you that look?
What look?
Oh, come on, Joe. You saw it. Hell, the whole camp saw it. Everybody just figured maybe you didn't want no part of Mr. Jake Coke. But we all let it pass.
He gave me a look. A dirty look.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he didn't give me no look. He don't want to neither, if he knows what's good for him. Without that rifle, I told you what I'd do to him.
We know. You used to be a bare-knuckled demon, Big Joe. But let's face it, that was a few years back. Everybody starts to slip a little with age.
Age, hell! I ain't but 33!
Easy, Joe. Nobody's making fun of you. Not really, anyway. We all understand how it is.
Who's been making fun of me?
Nobody, Joe. That's what I just said, didn't I?
Yeah. Yeah, but I heard how you said it. I can see you're just trying to edge me into something. But you don't have to. For 2 cents, I'd step down right now, walk over there, and beat something green out of Coke's ears.
Roundhouse Eddie pulled out 2 copper pennies and pitched them into Big Joe's lap. At the campfire, Kate McCorkle sipped her coffee.
He's stepping down now. He handed Roundhouse Eddie his reins.
Don't worry about it.
Coke reached down, drew his sawed-off rifle from its holster, looked at it as if inspecting it, then laid it down a few inches from his side.
Now, what were you saying about you and Sims?
Not now, Jake.
Coke looked a few yards away to his right, where a double-bough pinyon tree swayed in a hot noon breeze. He seemed to be judging the distance to the tree.
Whatever you do, don't make a move for the rifle.
What if it gets out of hand? If they try to kill you?
It's been tried before. I want no harm to come to you, Kate. That's all that matters to me.
Their eyes lingered for only a second, but in that second, Kate McCorkle saw that Jake Coke had gotten much closer to her over the past week than she'd ever intended. She felt like telling him right then and there not to lead himself to believe there was anything between them except their present situation. They'd gotten close, yes, but it was only out of necessity, wasn't it? Perhaps the only reason she thought Jake Coke might have become infatuated with her was because she had been feeling something toward him.
Get up, Coke! I saw that look you gave me!
That what?
You heard me, Coke! Get up, you cack-eyed, slab-sided idiot! I'm gonna take you apart and put you back together the right way!
Back off, Big Joe Macon. I don't want to hurt you over a bunch of nonsense.
Coke slid a glance at Pete Lambertus and Roundhouse Eddie, letting them know he understood who had started this.
1,000. 2,000.
This time, Coke was pacing himself as a way to stay out of Big Joe's reach. Systematically, Coke had to get Big Joe going in the direction he wanted to take him.
Get up or I'll drag you up.
Big Joe reached down with both hands for Jake Coke. The Coke rolled to the side, coming to his feet and moving a step back toward the double-bough pinion. Big Joe staggered a step as he turned to face him. Before Big Joe could catch his balance, a left jab caught him in his side.
One of those hit-and-hide fighters, eh? If that's your best lick, you better hope I get...
Coke bounced a step farther back, standing silently, seriously. His shoulders slumped even more than usual. He looked ape-like, his fists hanging down at his sides, his arms looking too long for his body.
Jesus! Come on, nail him, Joe!
3,000. 4,000.
Jake Coke rocked back another step, then another, seeming ready to turn and run. Big Joe ran a hand across his chin, feeling the smear of warm blood.
All right, you monkey-looking son of a...
Jake Coke punched him in the face, making lunged forward, seeing Jake Coke back farther away.
Stand still and fight, damn you! I'll break every bone in...
Jake Coke made this punch to the face a definer.
You ain't got no punch. Now, I'm gonna...
Big Joe righted himself again, standing in a wobbly low crouch. Too low. His big feet spread too far apart. His eyes wandering aimlessly for a second as Coke backed farther away and took what looked like a firm stand.
All right. That's it. For you, Coke. Now, I'm gonna finish you off.
Coke stood firm this time, giving Big Joe Macon a target. Big Joe saw it and took advantage of it. He lunged forward, a hard right coming all the way around from behind him, everything he had riding on it. But Jake Coke wasn't there. Nothing was there but the looming double boughs of the pinion about shoulder high on Big Joe Macon. His thick arm shot between the V and the boughs, and he slammed into the trunk. Jake Coke grabbed his arm from the other side of the V and yanked him forward again and again, slamming his head into the tree. The other men drew closer in a half circle, speechless, their mouths agape. But Bob Hearn stayed back from the others, faint trace of a smile on his face while his thumb hooked in his pistol belt.
You see this? This is all because he couldn't stand keeping his hands off the woman.
The men looked at one another, some nodding, others only staring.
Anytime there's a woman in camp,
There's trouble. I've never met JT Priest, but I'm having second thoughts about him. Would you do this? Bring a woman in here and cause this kind of trouble?
Pryor didn't answer, but he didn't have to. Jake Coke had made a point to every man there. He knew he'd just raised some doubts about JT Priest. And in doing so, he also knew he wouldn't have to worry as much about Kate McCorkle from now on. Big Joe Macon was the biggest man in the camp. It had to mean something to the others.
I joined this because you invited me to, Pryor. Am I going to have any more trouble over her? Because if I am, I'll straighten it out one at a time with everybody here. And who's next?
The men shied back a step, avoiding Coke's harsh, crooked stare.
You've made your point, Coke.
What about you, Lambertus? You look like you've got something on your mind. You want to take up where Joe left off? Huh? Do you?
Not today, Jake. Maybe sometime when you're not all tuckered out.
I'm not tired at all, Lambertus.
You don't have to worry about the woman, Coke. All I want to do is get her to Priest. It's between him and Sims what happens to her.
Good enough for me.
Coke walked back to the fire, sat down, and picked up his coffee cup. He turned to Kate McCorkle, who sat looking at him, stunned.
Okay, well, that's that. Now, go on with what you were telling me before he butted in, about how long you and Sims have been together.
Once the camp had settled and Lambertus and Roundhouse Eddie had dragged Big Joe Macon away from the tree, Bob Hearns came to the small campfire and stooped down to pour himself some coffee.
Good work, teacher.
See, you're going to be all right from here on.
Until we get to JT Priest, anyway. Jake, I appreciate all you've done for me, but I think I need to tell you something.
Shh, you don't have to explain. I understand.
Kate gave him a curious look.
I know you're quick, Charlie Sims, woman. Nothing we're doing here is going to change that. I wouldn't allow it anyway. It would be like taking advantage of you under these circumstances.
I just thought I should mention it.
Coke nodded and felt silent for a moment. Kate could see he had more to say and was searching for the way to say it. She gave him the time he needed.
I will admit I could easily have some powerful feelings for you, Kate. But I have no expectations. I know who I am, and I know that a man like me isn't meant to have a woman like you. So there, I just like being near you for a while. That's all there is to it. Call it wishful thinking. I do it sometimes. What's the harm in it, right?
A man like you... A woman like me. Jake, a woman would be most fortunate to have a man like you.
Oh, come on, Kate. You don't have to say that. I don't fool myself. There's men who women want, and there's men they don't want. Guess which one I am. Never had a real woman. Someone who cared enough about me to want to see me come home to the house every night at supper time. I saw a long time ago that somebody like that wasn't in the cards for me. I've always wondered how that would feel.
Have you ever stayed in one place long enough to give it a chance?
No. Not for a long time, anyway. I'm just not the kind of man that a woman notices and wants to get to know. I'm just plain Jake, a face passing by on a busy street. Once out of sight, I'm out of mind. But I accept that. I'll tell you one thing, though. If ever I do find someone who cares for me the way you care for Sims, I'll spend the rest of my life at her side. I won't mistreat her. I won't take her for granted. I'll work at whatever trade it takes to make her happy. She'll never have to wonder where I am at night or who I'm with or how I feel about her. When I touch her, I'll touch her the way a man touches a precious jewel.
Jake.
Yeah?
I really am Charlie's woman. And, believe it or not, I am faithful to him. So you can save it for another time.
So, you're not buying any of this?
Buying it? I wasn't even shopping for it. But you're good. You had me going there for a second.
Coke tipped his hat brim.
Well, thank you, ma'am. That's good to hear. Sometimes it works, sometimes it don't.